You are listening to teaching from Castle Hills Christian Church in San Antonio, Texas. More information about Castle Hills Christian Church is available at chccsa.com.
Good morning, CHCC. Moral decline isn't just when the world gets worse. It's when God's people stop being different. In Genesis chapter 31, verse 13, Jacob is given an itinerary to head to Bethel. It says, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land. And we talked about this earlier in May, where Jacob eventually wrestles with God. He has this major wrestling scene, and we see a transformation in his life. We see that he eventually meets his brother Esau, who he had a rocky relationship with. And I know that Jacob was scared about this. And we see in Genesis chapter 33, verse 18, it says, after Jacob went from Padanaram, he arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within sight of the city. For 100 pieces of silver, he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. And we see that Jacob was on a mission to get to Bethel. No layovers, no instructions to stop short. But he does stop in Shechem, which is only about 20 miles from Bethel. And he covered 500 miles fleeing his uncle Laban, yet he stopped short of Bethel. Why did he stop short? Archaeologists tell us that Shechem was a well-fortified city, about 6 acres, would have had between 500 to 1,000 people. It was on a major trade route. And maybe Jacob and his family, they were tired and dusty from a long journey. You've been there, right? Like the last 50 miles or so of the trip, you're just tired. You're ready just to be there. But it seems like that's the longest part of the trip. And maybe they got to that part and they're like, hey, this looks good enough. The land looks good. They maybe meet some people. Maybe they buy some goods there. And next thing you know, Jacob has some people in his ears and is like, hey, we're just tired of moving. Let's just camp here. And we're going to see that Jacob's going to regret this choice. From chapters 34 to 39 is some of the darkest sections, or is the darkest section in Genesis and for God's people. There's a transitioning happening here. We're going to see the move from focusing on Jacob to actually his sons. And we're going to see that this does not go well. In chapter 4, we're going to see that Jacob's sons are guilty of deceit and violence, starting with Simeon and Levi. In chapter 35, we're going to see that Reuben sleeps with Jacob's concubine. In chapter 37, Jacob's sons sell their brother Joseph into slavery. And then chapter 8, Judah sleeps with his son's widow. And so this is the context. Chapter 34, we're beginning to walk into intense moral decline. Pastor Jonathan Parnell notices two little words went out that kind of outlines this chapter that gives us four scenes or four acts for chapter 34. It starts off with Dinah went out. In verse 1, chapter 34, it says, now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, had born to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. So Dinah went out, and we don't know exactly what this means, but we do know that she was vulnerable because Shechem, the prince of Shechem, sees her and violates her, and he humiliates her. He causes her shame. And depending on your translation, it words it different ways, but he basically rapes her. Verse 2 says, when Shechem, son of Hamor, the Hivite, the ruler of that area, saw her, he took her and raped her. We see three verbs here: saw, took, and violate. Or your translation might say humiliate or rape. Saw and took. Can anyone kind of think of where we saw those two words, saw and took, in the book of Genesis? If you remember in Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, it says, when the woman saw the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some of it and ate it. In 2 Samuel chapter 11, and there's the story of King David and Bathsheba. Things were going well for King David. Instead of going out to war, he was on top of his palace and he sees this beautiful woman bathing. He sins for her. He basically takes her, and we know that things don't end up well in that story either. And that's how sin works. It rarely stops with just seeing, and desire moves to taking, and then taking leads to destruction. It leads to problems in our life. Now, notice the irony in this story. Shechem wants to marry Dinah after violating her. And you're like, what? He wants to marry her? He speaks tenderly to her. He says he's madly in love with her. Yet he violated her. He raped her. We're never told of what Dinah thinks of Shechem. It seems like she's treated more of an object to be bargained for more than anything else. So Shechem tells his father Hamor, get Dinah for him as his wife. And meanwhile, he goes back to Jacob that Shechem has violated, or word gets back to Jacob that his daughter's been violated. And here's the interesting part. Jacob doesn't do anything. He doesn't defend her. He's silent. I can just tell you, as a husband, as a father, as a brother, if someone violates one of my relatives, I'm going to speak up. And I'm probably going to have some kind of action behind that in some capacity. Hopefully, I have some kind of restraint. I remember I had a relative that was being physically abused. And man, it was all I could do not to head that direction and lay some holy hands on that person, on that dude. Like there's an anger that burns up in me when I see people being violated, who are being abused. And I can tell you this, when something happens to my friends, something happens in our church flock and I hear about it, man, there's a righteous anger and at times maybe even a fleshly anger that bubbles up that says, man, we got to do something. This isn't right. Justice needs to be served to this person. But with Jacob, he stays silent. Verse 5, it says, when Jacob heard that his daughter Dinah had been defiled, his sons were in the field with the livestock, so he did nothing about it until they came home. But he really didn't even do anything when they came home. We'll find out. He finally speaks, but it's later on. And we come to Act 2. Hamor went out. Shechem's father Hamor went out to talk with Jacob. Hamor is trying to make a marriage deal. No apology, no repentance, just negotiation. Let's intermarry. Let's trade. Let's get wealthy together. Let's make a profit. And this wasn't reconciliation, it was assimilation. While they're meeting, Jacob's sons hear about what happened. Verse 7, meanwhile, Jacob's sons had come in from the fields. As soon as they heard what happened, they were shocked and furious. That's what you would expect to hear from Jacob. Because Shechem had done an outrageous thing in Israel, notice that, by sleeping with Jacob's daughter, a thing that should not have been done. Correct, it should not have been done. So Jacob's sons, they're angry, not just because this is their sister, but they see this as an attack on the entire family. This is the first time that the name Israel is used to refer to a whole group of people. So there's a corporate identity here. This is an attack by Shechem on Dinah, viewed as an attack on Israel, the people. And so they are angry. But the sons of Jacob hide their anger from Hamor, and instead they end up deceiving him. Hamor doesn't just want Shechem to marry Dinah, but they want everyone, well, they want the families to intermarry, they want the groups of people to intermarry. And so Hamor says starting in verse 9, intermarry with us. Give us your daughters and take our daughters for yourself. You can settle among us. The land is open to you. Live in it, trade in it, acquire property in it. Hamor is desperate to make a deal here, and he'll give whatever they ask, any price. He just wants Dinah as a wife for his son. And we see that Jacob's sons replied in verse 13, because their sister Dinah had been defiled, Jacob's sons replied deceitfully. Notice that. As they spoke to Shechem and his father Hamor, they said to him, we can't do such a thing. We can't give our sister to a man who is not circumcised, and that would be a disgrace to us. We'll enter into an agreement with you on one condition only, that you become like us by circumcising all of your males. Then we'll give our daughters and take your daughters for ourselves. We'll settle among you and become one people with you. But if you will not agree to be circumcised, we'll take our sister and hit the road. We'll go. So Jacob's son, instead of seeking God, they choose deception, just like their father did in his life. We know that Jacob deceived Esau. We know that he had that in his past, and we see that his sons are doing the same thing. Hamor and Shechem agree to this deal. Now they have to convince the other men of Shechem to go through with it. And so we see Act 3, all of the men come out. And so we see that Hamor and Shechem, they go to the city and they tell the men the terms of the deal. They basically said, hey, Jacob, they're becoming one people with us. Verse 23, won't their livestock, their property, and all of their animals become ours? So let us agree to their terms, and they will settle among us. Hey, it's beneficial. We're going to get their wealth. We're going to get everything. All the men who went out to the city of Great agreed with Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male of the city was circumcised. You get circumcised, you'll get more women, you'll get more wealth. This is a good thing. But here's the problem. What has Genesis told us about the family of Abraham and marriage to the Canaanites? It's very strong. Don't do it. Abraham told Isaac back in Genesis chapter 24, do not marry a Canaanite. Isaac told Jacob back in 28, do not marry a Canaanite. The only person who did marry a Canaanite was Esau, and that made life bitter for Rebekah, his mother. So going back to granddaddy Abraham, it's not good to marry a Canaanite. And the reason why is because they worship false gods, and they will lead the family of Abraham astray from the one true God. So don't do it. Don't marry the Canaanites. But again, Jacob is silent. And here's his turn to speak up and to pass down the same command to his sons, don't intermarry. But he doesn't say anything. That moves us to Act 4. Simeon and Levi went out. Verse 25, this is from the NET Bible. It says, in 3 days, they were still in pain. Two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took out his sword and went to the unsuspecting city and slaughtered every male. So Simeon and Levi weaponized something that's holy. Circumcision was a holy deed, a destination for God's people. It was a symbol of faith, and Simeon and Levi don't have that ritual in mind. They have revenge in mind. The sign of the covenant was appropriated by Shechem to gratify his lust, by Hamor to increase his cattle, and by the sons of Jacob to cover up for murder, or to be used as a cover for murder. The sons of Jacob had taken what God had given as holy, as a religious sign, and used it for their own wicked ends. Sadly, the same thing happens to us today. In the name of God or Jesus or religion, in the name of Christianity, we sometimes use that to abuse others, to use it for our gains, to exploit others. And sometimes the biggest moral decline is not on the outside, but actually from the faith community, from the inside. When we treat people like commodities, instead of respecting humanity, the humanity of all people, we've missed the very heart of God, of loving others and realizing that everyone's created in God's image. So sometimes the moral decline isn't from the outside, but it's actually from us when we forget that all people are made in the image of God, when we try to take advantage of others. So we see Simeon and Levi, they didn't just kill Shechem, but they kill all the males. Is this righteous justice or sinful revenge? They took justice into their own hands. Violence is poured onto violence. You can almost justify Shechem for being killed, but the means about it was wrong. Then they didn't stop with the killing. They also plundered the city. They took the wealth. They took the women. They took the children. The sons of Jacob took it all. And in verse 30, Jacob finally speaks up. And he rebukes Simeon and Levi. It says, then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have brought trouble on me by making me obnoxious to the Canaanites and Perizzites, the people living in the land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed. And you know what Jacob's concern is? His reputation, his safety, his standing in the land. Not Dinah's trauma, not justice, not God's holiness. Bruce Waukee in his commentary says, Dinah is an object of passion to Shechem, a bargaining chip to Hamar, and a source of moral outrage on behalf of her brothers, and passive indifference by her father. And the sons respond this way. They said, should we have treated our sister like a prostitute? The brothers are still sticking up for their sister. And then the story ends. There's no heroes, no inspiration. Quite honestly, the story is depressing. We see depravity here. So what do we learn from this chapter? First of all, I think more decline grows where God is absent. God is never mentioned in this chapter. No prayer, no wisdom sought, no repentance. Moral decline accelerates when God's people stop asking God for help. Secondly, the darkness outside exposes the darkness within. The darkness outside exposes the darkness within. Psalm 36:1 says, sin whispers to the wicked deep within their hearts. They have no fear of God at all. And Jeremiah 17:9-10 says, the human heart is the most deceitful of all things, desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? But I, the Lord, searches all hearts and examine the secret motives. I give all people their due rewards and according to what their actions deserve. We may have not committed rape or murder, but we all carry shadows. Before we condemn the culture, we must examine our hearts. See, confession precedes transformation. And so at this time, I just want to encourage you to look into your heart. Yes, we can all be disgusted about some of the things that are going on in the moral decline, but we also need to examine our heart. We need to look into our lives. And then thirdly, we need to guard our heart relentlessly. Shechem was toxic, but Jacob's family inhaled the fumes. They were influenced by it. Proverbs 4, verses 23 to 27 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Keep your mouth free from of perversity. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the paths of your feet and be steadfast in all of your ways. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Keep your foot from evil. Some of us, we need to do something radical. We need to have some radical obedience in our life. You might need to put some filters on your computer or on your phone. Some of you need some accountability. That may even taking the step of joining AA for some of you. Some of you might need to end some unhealthy relationships or put some boundaries up. Some of you need to change some habits. Some of you need to walk away from some environments that are pulling you away from God. That may mean canceling a trip. Maybe Vegas is one of those places that you enjoy, but at the same time, it's a temptation for you to do some other things. Maybe it's New York. I don't know. Maybe it's a movie that you need to not go and watch. Maybe it's a concert. I don't know. But I think we need to become aware of some of those things in our life that we need to walk away from that's causing us to go astray. So what is keeping you from Bethel, from being close to God? Don't pitch your tent in the shadow of Shechem. Move the next 20 miles. See, partial obedience is still disobedience. So this morning, let me just give you a few next steps. Identify your Shechem. Where have you settled instead of obeyed? Invite God into your decision-making. Pray before reacting. And guard your heart intentionally. And then move the last 20 miles. Again, partial obedience is still disobedience.